This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonantoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The cut line looms at Augusta National. The NFL draft creeps closer by the day, and we've got a whole lot of big news to break down as we welcome you into this Mike Palm Friday edition of the Lombardi Line. The show is always presented by DraftKings. What's going on, Mike?
How are you? Lots of stuff going on.
Lots of stuff.
Well, the Masters, of course, is the compelling story. How many shots will Scheffler win by? I think I just was talking to Bill Cramsey, our director of player development, who is an avid golfer and golf better. And I said, I think I'm going to start looking at delay strokes with Scheffler instead of betting him to win, bet him 2.5, 3.5, something like that. He's like a machine. Tiger's right around the cut. That's a compelling story. So tons of action. We do a great ride. It's beautiful up at Stadium Swim. Another great day. Got the pricing, Masters pricing on the food, $1.50 sandwiches, $3 sandwiches, $16 Coors Light. So you can't beat that. And then these playoff races in the NHL are heating up. NBA as well, as they're playing for seeding. Baseball's getting underway. Some great storylines with some young teams. Pirates off to a great start. Royals. I think we'll talk about that when we go into our grab bag of mail today. JVT asked a great question about the Royals. And NBA's going as well. And so there's a ton of stuff going on. Even they say, you know, we get a little break because college basketball's over and now's the downtime. Not quite yet.
Yeah. No shortage of content. That's for sure at this point. And we got some great guests as well that are coming
up.
Sorry.
Yeah. And UFL.
Yeah. Don't forget about the UFL.
And UFL, another big weekend, week three.
Do not disrespect spring football. We got a rematch of the XFL championship from last year this weekend, all the things. But a great guest list coming up today as well. As you talk about this being the final couple days of the NBA regular season, Nick Whalen of RotoWire is going to stop by, give some of his thoughts on how to approach betting these games and the playoff picture. We'll also have Shane Knighty, TV analyst for the Vegas Golden Knights, my old friend and colleague. He's going to join us because it's a interesting situation right now for the Golden Knights today as they face the Wild, and you've got the Blues who face the Canes earlier today to figure out one of those spots in the West.
Well, yeah, they still have work to do to clinch a playoff spot, although obviously the odds are in their favor. But I think, and we're going to talk about this with Shane, if there's any way they could catch the Kings for third and stay in that Pacific bracket, that's brutal. If you're wild card two, you have to go to Dallas. If you win there, you get Colorado or Winnipeg. That's a tough road to get to the Western Final.
No doubt about it. So lots to get to. We'll talk NHL a little bit later on in the show, but I do want to start off here with the Masters a little bit because your point about Scottie Scheffler is interesting. I said earlier this week, I know that like in these big tournaments, everybody loves a long shot, right? Like it's called the Long Shots Podcast here at VSiN for a reason. And everybody likes being able to cash a 50-1 or a 45-1. But sometimes the favorites are the favorites for a reason. And Scheffler just seems like he's on another planet.
Well, the thing in golf is the consistency, right? I mean, it's very hard to go out there every week and be in it on Sunday. But he's been so consistent. And good thing for the books is, to your point, people are looking for value, and so they're looking to bet longer prices. He was the shortest favorite since Tiger was in his prime, so it was very tough to bet him. I know 4-1 in some books, and of course now he's less than 3-2, and by the time the day's over, it might be a big minus sign in front of him. So he performed as expected. Obviously DeChambeau and Homa had huge first rounds as well, so they're right in the mix. Rory is there, who was a popular bet before. You know, Fred Couples was our biggest liability, which I mentioned yesterday. He's not going to win, right? So now let's just cross him out. Tiger, who's threatening the cut, you know, flirting with the cut line, would be our biggest liability. And then I think next is Rory McIlroy. But we're sitting really good right now, I would say. I can't say well, really good right now. And that Scheffler's a good result for us. Home is a good result as of now. Things can change because obviously every night around 8 o'clock we repost all the odds, and then there's a ton of money on the matchups.
Yeah, with Tiger. So the thing that I probably invested the most in was Tiger to win the cut. I did not anticipate the delayed start yesterday, and so that gave me a little bit of pause and reason for concern having to play 23 holes today. He's 2 over right now, but if he does make the cut, sets a record, 24 consecutive cuts made at the Masters, which would be remarkable and awesome. And he's had some moments where he's looked really good, like the swing looks good, the touch looks good. He had that awesome chip in for birdie this morning, just some things that you see about Tiger make you really feel like he's back and that he's good. I just hope that his body can hold up today on such a hilly course.
Can he walk that many holes? I mean, that's going to be the challenge. I think it's a bad beat with the rain, and that he has to have the weighted one day over the other instead of trying to do 18 twice. I know it's hard. It's hard for him to look down when he putts even. But obviously everyone's pulling for him because it's a much more compelling storyline.
And then Scheffler, of course, will start his round later on this hour, 10:48 Pacific, 1:48 Eastern. If you ever thought you were a bad sports bettor, Ipe Mitsuhara said, hold my beer. What is going on with this, latest update in the Shohei Ohtani betting scandal discussion? It is like, I feel like every article I'm reading, it just gets crazier and crazier. It's like a movie.
You know how Law and Order, they always say it's based on headlines or ripped from the headlines, and it's some takeoff on what really happened in life. This seems like it was taken out of a TV show, right? I remember there was a Law and Order, the original, many years ago, probably in the first three or four seasons, where it was a baseball player who was a bettor, but then it was his dad, right, who was the bettor, but no, it was really the baseball player, and the dad was covering, right, to protect the – I mean – he lost how many million?
16.
That's what he stole.
So yeah, the initial report was that it was $4.5 million. He reportedly, according to the federal investigation complaint, stole over $16 million. And then when you look up the losses with the illegal bookmaker, in net losses, over $40 million.
Who'd he steal the other 24 from? Or is he still?
Well, he must have won some bets at some point,
still,
right?
You 24 go up and in the down. Hole. How about the U.S. attorney? They're all in on Ohtani, the victim. I mean, Rob Manfred's got to be tickled pink about this.
Oh, yeah, because apparently the one thing that, if all this were true and Ipe Mitsuhara didn't do all of this, the one thing he didn't lie about was that he didn't bet on baseball. So Manfred's probably just skipping that, okay, Ohtani's the victim and there was no betting on baseball.
$200 million in bets, not one on baseball, not even the $10 ones.
Well, how crazy is that? So apparently, averaging, according to these documents, up to 20, like averaging 25 bets a day, ranging anywhere from $10 to $160,000. What are the, like, are those just 17 leg parlays with a bookie that you're doing for the $10 bets? What is
maybe,
that?
Maybe. I mean, what was he hedging $10? the story, here's another interesting part of it. And we covered this with Mitch and Paul yesterday morning with our guest, who's the former president of the Marlins. Ohtani's first home run ball for the Dodgers, you know, a lady caught it, you know, and then they're going to go out and offer them something because they want to have that historic ball. They separate the lady from her husband. They offer her like two hats and a bat. I mean, it was a ridiculous offer. And then Ohtani comes out and says, yeah, it was very special. I went and I met with the lady, and the lady and her husband says, we never got to meet Ohtani. Like, what is he lying about? If he would lie about that, I mean, there's something that's irrelevant. There's no need for him to go and say, I went and met this woman.
Maybe the interpreter just misunderstood what he was saying.
Another interpreter that we have a problem with.
That's really interesting, though. But that goes to show, too, how difficult things are with the language barrier. Another layer to this, again, according to this federal complaint, is that Ipe was pretending to be Shohei on phone calls to the banks to authorize these transfers, that he knew the answers to the security questions that he has underway, and nobody else had access to the funds. This, by the way, is a bank account that his angel salary was being directly deposited into.
Doesn't he have a business manager? Doesn't he have a lawyer that's looking out for his money? Something?
He has those things.
What are they doing?
But they don't have access to that account. Ipe does.
There's no one to monitor his account?
I'm just mind blown every step of the way. An apparent text from Mitsuhara to the bookie saying, I'm terrible at this sports betting thing, huh? LOL. Any chance you can bump me again? As you know, you don't have to worry about me paying. And then after this whole story became public, apparently there was another exchange where the bookie said, obviously you didn't steal from him. I understand it's a cover job. I totally get it. To which Ipe said, technically I did steal from him. It's all over for me. So it's just the layers continue to get deeper.
And none of the thousands of texts between the interpreter and Shohei talk about the gambling.
Evidently,
at all, right?
9,700 pages of text they went through. There was no reference of bookie, betting, wagering, or this private account, allegedly.
Well, good for baseball.
I just said yesterday, if this is all true, we already knew Shohei was rich, but if you don't notice $16 million being gone, you must be like rich, not to notice that much out of an account.
Deferring $200 million in salary, I mean.
Point made, but still, it's just every step of this. Again, the quote from the U.S. Attorney Martin Estrada in the news conference, I want to emphasize to this point, Mr. Ohtani is considered a victim in this case. Mitsuhara used and abused that position of trust in order to plunder Mr. Ohtani's bank account to the tune of over $16 million.
This is going to be a whole nother path now for criminal masterminds to become interpreters. I mean, this is hook on to the right athlete.
I guess, like, just again, reading through this, it's just to your point, it sounds like it's been taken from a TV show, that this is something that's scripted and it's not real. There was another element of this where evidently Mitsuhara was ducking the bookmaker for a time. And he says, I'm watching Ohtani right now, walking his dog in Newport Beach. I'm going to go talk to him if you don't get back to me. Like, it just everything about this seems insane. And it just seems like there's no way is this real?
Are they going to release the bets? I want to see all the bets.
I want to know what the hell this dude was betting $10 on. That's what I need to know. I think that's the biggest question of it all.
I really would like to see the bets and just to try to understand what his philosophy was. I'm sure a lot of it was soccer, but it's interesting. And the bookie taking that kind of a limit is interesting, too. So,
but again, this the way that the U.S. attorney is talking about it is absolute best case scenario for baseball. That you're
victim.
But we were talking in the break. This story just doesn't make any sense whatsoever to me. This is just the tip of the iceberg. We'll see if any of this continues to be a distraction moving forward. Ohtani, such a private person. There's a language barrier. We can't understand what he's saying, even when he does say things. So it is a lot. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, we have an update in the Kentucky head coaching search and lots of NFL news and notes. Could this player be coming back? I don't think so, but we'll discuss.
This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you haven't checked out the new and improved VSiN.com, now's the time. Same great educational daily content, but a fresh new look. Easily consumable, have all of our VSiN hosts and guests' best bets, our exclusive articles and betting splits, odds by state, betting tools, betting guides, and so much more. Head to VSiN.com. We are back live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Mike Palm in for Michael Lombardi, like he is every Friday. Stormy Bonantoni with you. And as I said before the break, we have an update in the Kentucky head coach search development. After reportedly swinging and missing on about a half a dozen candidates, they have landed on BYU head coach Mark Pope, former Kentucky player, won a title in 1996. But the most interesting part of this to me, Mike, is that you move on from a coach largely because of the lack of recent success in the NCAA tournament, and you hire a coach that has never had a win in the NCAA tournament.
Took me out of the Survivor. BYU did, by the way. So,
oh, yeah. You and Mitch Moss still bitter about that. I don't blame you.
Tried to get a little cute on opening day.
I'll say both instances where Mark Pope and BYU have been in the NCAA tournament, they were the better seed and they lost to a double digit seed.
It surprised me. And it kind of caught me off guard a little bit because I read a story. They're interested in Pope. They're targeting Pope. And like 10 minutes later, deal is done.
Yeah. 5 years. Let's go.
I get it. He's an alum, right? I mean, he played on their national championship team and he did do good things in the regular season with BYU. But to your point, no converting that to postseason success so far. So I thought it was a bit of a reach. I don't know the importance of how quickly they had to do it in the cycle. Now that everybody can go anywhere, anytime, and it's just an open door. But I thought there might have been other big-name coaches that would have seen this as an opportunity. Now, I know it's a tough life because the expectations there are, they're kind of delusional. A little bit like, I think UCLA is delusional because, they keep wanting to talk about 10 national titles with Wooden. And so the expectations are so high. But
they remember when those were?
Most of them don't know. They remember Jim Herrick's title with the Abandon Brothers. So Scott Drew said no, he was staying put. I thought Billy Dunham might want to come back, right? Now that somebody's matched his two titles in a row. I think NBA, it's a tough grind in the NBA, and I don't know how much control you have. But if you would have told me it would have been Mark Pope and it would have been done in 4 days, I would put the price on that at like 1,000 to 1. Yeah.
But you see, like you said, Scott Drew stays at Baylor. Yeah. Nate Oates shut it down. Danny Hurley's focused on a three-peat with UConn if he can. And the reason that this was so surprising to me was because there were all these big names assumed about it. And you think mm-hmm. that this being a blue blood Kentucky, such a coveted job, but it's not looking like that. And you go from having Big Blue Nation, who's so excited to get Cal out the door, but now reality is probably going to set in a little bit here.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? They're so happy he's gone. And I did that spot when
he gets a standing ovation, by the way, going to Arkansas.
I did the spot with ESPN Lexington a couple weeks ago at Stadium Swim, and the guy said 95% of the fan base is so upset that the AD announced he's going to stay. They can't stand it. And of course, everybody at Arkansas is so happy he's coming, yeah. Right? And I mean, I remember what he did when he was at UMass, and I mean, the guy can coach. And I know we went through the era of the one and dones, and what Jay Wright had to say about that. But I thought Scott Drew was probably the best choice for what he's done at Baylor and with the system, and not had anybody that really was tremendous NBA stars or anything, but has been really consistent in a really tough conference. So
did you think Patino would get a look at all to come
old.
Back?
Yeah. What's the plan with Patino? How's he going to recruit?
I agree.
Right. We don't know. Is he going to be here next year? And so I just think that's tough to recruit when, you know, you're at the end and it's a last gasp, a last hurrah type thing. And let's be honest, he still has a lot of baggage from Louisville for a program to have to answer to that has their probably, you know, perceived to have their choice of coaches that they would go somewhere like that.
Kentucky 20-1 in the odds for next year's NCAA tournament. Arkansas, by the way, their odds cut down from 70-1 to 30-1 upon hiring Cal. Duke and UConn, your favorites at the top of the odds board, 10-1. I also said before the break, will this player be coming back? I don't understand why this is being talked about, why Tom would open the door like this, but speaking on the deep cut show with Vic Blend, Tom Brady said he's, quote, not opposed to a return under the right circumstances. Take a listen. I thought,
let's say one day there's a situation, right? Maybe it's the 49ers, maybe, you know, heading to the playoffs, offense is great.
Patriots,
somebody,
Raiders, look, could be, you never know.
God forbid somebody goes down, would you pick up that phone?
I'm not opposed to it. If they would, I don't know if they're going to let me if I become an owner in the NFL team, but I don't know if, I don't know. I'm always going to be in good shape. I'll always be able to throw the ball. So to come in for a little bit, like MJ coming back, I don't know if they let me, but I wouldn't be opposed to it.
Thoughts?
But there's a lot of barbershop shows, I guess. That's my initial thought. It's interesting that, you know, when you're the spotlight craves you and you don't want it, which he was never really an attention-seeking person through all his titles and all that, right? He was all the ultimate team guy. But then when the spotlight's gone, maybe there's some craving for the spotlight. I mean, it's kind of ludicrous, isn't it?
Yeah.
I understand he's in shape and it's unbelievable and he's really the only guy that kind of beat time, but I mean, really. Why would you expose yourself? You have a good life the rest of your life. Why would you go out there and get injured? Why? What more do you need to prove?
I think he has so much more to prove. The seven right? rings aren't enough.
I mean, you came and went to a team. You left New England and won on your own, right? And took that team to the playoffs. I mean, go out with a great memory.
Yeah, you did everything that you can do. But that's why I feel like, especially like he referenced there with the ownership that he's trying to be able to get here with the Las Vegas Raiders. You have to, isn't it a unanimous vote that all of the owners would have to agree to let you play? You imagine if you're part owner in the Raiders, the Raiders aren't going to let you play for another team. If like even, I'm just trying to think, like logistically, it just doesn't make sense first and foremost. So I think it's just something that he's saying to say, to your point, that maybe he's not in the spotlight anymore. It's fun to have this conversation. Plus, I thought he was putting in all the work to get ready to be an analyst at Fox. Does he not want to do that?
Maybe that's too much pressure. Do you, Stormy, you're going to say no, but do you remember the movie Heaven Can Wait? So it's Warren Beatty, and he gets killed. Two people get killed. Anyhow, the soul goes into a body of this billionaire, And so he was a quarterback. So he buys the Rams and then says, I'm going to be the quarterback on the team. He buys the Raiders and puts him. So it's a really, really good movie. Diane Cannon, Charles Grodin. It's a classic if you can go back and see it. Julie Christie. But this just reminded me of buying a team and making yourself the quarterback.
A silly thing. While we're on aging quarterbacks, though, Aaron Rodgers was on a podcast this week as well for 2 hours, sat down, the Let It Fly podcast, and he said he feared his Achilles injury would end his career. He talked about all of the excitement he had last year joining the Jets and that it was just this newfound refresh being around all of those people. He felt as high as he could be on top, and then you get injured four plays in, 40 years old. You don't know what's ahead of you. It's like everything in your brain of the success and excitement you had for the season comes crashing down. Thought maybe his career was over. Then obviously reworked back. And now he's ready here for year two and play five with the New York Jets. What are your expectations for this Jets team?
Lower than the market would suggest. I think they have an uphill climb to be a playoff team. Before the injury, he showed signs of deterioration. I'm not saying he played at a poor level, but he didn't play at that elite level he was at in Green Bay his last year there, right? He gets the new environment. And so, people were very optimistic. I'm much less optimistic off an injury and a year older, right? Now, I won't be shocked if he, throws 30 touchdowns and has six interceptions. But I wouldn't be shocked either if he gets hurt again. Have they done enough with their line to protect him? I mean, one hit. That was all it took last year. One hit and he was done. I mean, if you're a Jets fan or a Jets bettor or you're invested in the Jets or you own the team or anything like that, you have to hold your breath every time somebody comes to hit him because the next one probably will be the last one.
No,
I think it's a tough bet to bet over their wins and bet the playoffs, Stormy.
So I was looking at their division and it's so compact at the top. Bills plus 160, Jets and Dolphins both sitting there at plus 200, but I don't have firm faith in any one of those teams right now.
I really thought that there would be a shot Miami would be favored to win the division this year, but then Fangio leaves, right? And then he talks about the culture. They've had injuries on the defensive side of the ball. So like you can go through and find faults with these teams, these top three teams. And maybe it's just the Bills continue on with their dominance of the division.
I mean, maybe they, even without Stephon Diggs, I said on the show earlier this week, I wonder if the Diggs absence can be addition by subtraction in some ways because of how tumultuous that relationship was. And we know that you can draft a wide receiver and have him directly translate. So maybe with 28, they just grab a receiver. They're favored minus 300 to do so. They get a good guy and they're fine in the wide receiver room. I don't know.
Yeah, I think they need to get bigger defensively, though. They're a small defense. So, I mean, we criticize all these things and they've continued to be successful, but just couldn't beat the Chiefs in the playoffs.
No question about it. We're going to hit the break here. Lots more NFL talk throughout the course of the show. The draft this time next week, round one will be in the books. So we'll talk through some of that. But when we return, NBA conversation with RotoWire's Nick Whalen. Stay with us.
This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
For a limited time, we're offering here at VSiN 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free when you sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage of this limited time offer. VSiN.com/splits is how you can claim your free 2 week access to VSiN's betting splits. Mike Palm and Stormy Bonantoni with you as we get into a little NBA talk with the regular season winding down. Our good friend Nick Whalen joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line. RotoWire senior NBA and NFL analyst. You can catch him on SiriusXM NBA and Fantasy Sports Radio. Welcome in, Nick. How we doing?
Doing well, guys. We're doing well. We've reached a part of the NBA season where it's very, very difficult to bet some of these slates where you have to really dig in on the motivation of each team, but very much looking forward to the playoffs next week and, of course, the Masters the rest of the weekend.
All right, Nick, let's get to the card tonight before we talk about macro issues so everybody knows what you're on. The Knicks are hosting the Nets. Knicks, currently an 11-point favorite in this matchup, and I know so much of your betting right now is lineup dependent. Tell me where you see the edge tonight in this game.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, especially on a 15-game yep. slate like we have tonight, and then we'll have again on Sunday, things can get a little messy. You know, you see it, Oklahoma City favored by 16 over the Milwaukee Bucks, and it makes you wonder a little bit. So I like to pick and choose games where we kind of know where the motivation lies, and this is one of them for me, because the New York Knicks need to keep winning games, right? They're sitting in third in the Eastern Conference. They do have a chance, should they want to, and maybe we could discuss that later as far as some of these first-round matchups, to potentially overtake the Milwaukee Bucks. But either way, if you're New York, I don't think you want to fall further than third in the Eastern Conference. You got Cleveland, you got Orlando right on your heels. Knicks are on the second night of a back-to-back, obviously played last night against Boston, played very well. And if there's one thing we know about a Tom Thibodeau coach team, guys, it's that they're not going to take their foot off the gas. We saw that against Boston, right? They win that game big. Tibbs says after the game, well, we didn't play a full 48 minutes. This team does not let up. I feel comfortable taking the Knicks up to 11 against a Nets team that has absolutely nothing to play for. And a Nets team, and they've been doing this for a while, guys. We saw it the other night. They're starting to pull back, even in these meaningless games on minutes for guys like Mikal Bridges. So I don't know that we see a full effort from the Nets. I think we get a full effort from the Knicks. I like them minus 11 at home.
Well, because you mentioned the Bucks-Thunder game, I see there is a prop that you have gone to in that game. First of all, in a card like this, when it's already tough enough to go through and pick your moments on the card just for the games, how tough is it to dive into all the prop markets on a 15-game slate as well? And then what do you have in the game?
Yeah, guys, it's super difficult, right? I mean, you look at that Celtics-Knicks game last night specifically. I think that's a great example. It's like the Knicks were, I think, only 3-point dogs to the Celtics, and Celtics had all their guys out there. And then you look at the prop market, and I think Jason Tatum's player prop was 21.5, and Jaylen Brown was 17.5. You're like, all right, something is afoot here. I think it's a little more cut and dry tonight with this OKC-Milwaukee game. As of right now, you know, obviously we know Giannis is out. Lopez, Lillard, Middleton, Portis, all those guys are questionable. The line is 16. I think the expectation is the bulk of those players are sitting out tonight for the Milwaukee Bucks. So OKC, they're still in contention for the one seed. I think they'll still push it tonight. You do worry about the blowout potential, of course, but even in these blowouts, guys, we tend to see SGA get his numbers. I'm staying away from the points because of that blowout potential, but I'm looking at SGA over 1.5 steals. You know, I'm always good for some defensive props. Mm-hmm. He's got multiple steals in 7 of his last 10 games. He's averaging over 2 steals per game on the year. And we're going to have a lot of unfamiliarity out there tonight for Milwaukee. I think it could be a little bit chaotic. So taking a bit of a risk here, but I like SGA over 1.5 steals.
Nick, the Lakers are currently the 9th seed in the West. They'll be in the play-in bracket. They're in Memphis tonight, and you're interested in the Anthony Davis props.
I am. The Lakers are one of only a handful of teams that really do have a lot to play for tonight. I mean, the dream of getting out of the play-in is officially dead, but they can still get to that 7-8 zone, which, of course, you know, kind of affords you the ability to lose that first play-in game and still win your way in. I mean, they're currently in 10th right now by virtue of losing to Golden State earlier this week. They don't have a tiebreaker over the Warriors, so they need to push tonight. Good matchup against what remains, guys, of the Memphis Grizzlies, who currently have 13 players already ruled out for this game. Well, we'll see if they add to that before we get to tip. I like Anthony Davis over 36.5 points plus rebounds. Obviously missed some time lately, but he said he'll be back tonight. He said he's feeling great. The head issue he was dealing with is a thing of the past. Lakers, again, need to win this game. Anthony Davis averaging 43 combined points plus rebounds over his last 9 healthy games. And again, you worry about the blowout potential in a game like this, but Memphis has covered 4 of their last 6 games. You know, they rank near the middle of the league in terms of defense, despite missing so many guys. They're still playing hard for Taylor Jenkins. And right now they just have absolutely nobody who could stop Anthony Davis.
RotoWire NBA analyst Nick Whalen joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. A game with the shorter spread, the Warriors and Pelicans tonight, Golden State laying 4 against New Orleans. And Golden State, obviously, a very similar situation as the Lakers, which can we put to bed, by the way? Are they the most dangerous team in the West if they get in? I'm really, really tired and done with that conversation. But what do you have invested in this game tonight?
Now, unfortunately, I don't know if that conversation is going to die down, Stormy, until the Lakers or the Warriors are officially eliminated. But yeah, I mean, this is one where both teams obviously have motivation. I mean, Golden State can, much like the Lakers, they could still get to that 7 or 8 spot. Pelicans, you know, pulled off a nice win last night over Sacramento, but they still have plenty to play for. They play the Lakers in the final game of the season, should get Brandon Ingram back for that one. I'm looking at Trey Murphy tonight for the Pelicans, who's played really, really well especially since Brandon Ingram went down. His points prop sitting at 16.5, and I like the over there. Again, Pels need to keep winning to avoid the bottom part of that play-in. They're only up one game on the Phoenix Suns heading into tonight. Trey Murphy has 58 combined points in his last two games. He's averaging well over this number if you go all the way back to his last 15 games. And since Brandon Ingram went down, guys, he's playing almost 40 minutes per game. He's taking almost 9 threes per game in that span. Warriors have been good on defense of late. I think they get Draymond Green back tonight, but they are near the top of the league in three-pointers allowed. And, of course, that is Trey Murphy's calling card.
Nick, I want to talk about the Eastern Conference from a playoff perspective. You did mention the Knicks. Would they want to get the two? If they got the two, they're going to get either Philadelphia or Miami in the first round. If they're the three, you really don't know, but probably Orlando or Indianapolis. Speak to which matchup is better for the Knicks. And then second part of the question, who is the biggest threat to the Celtics in the East other than the Celtics?
So first of all, on the Knicks, I think they're okay with any of Cleveland, Orlando, and Indiana. To me, I think I would rather play the Magic or the Pacers of those three. I know Cleveland's been all over the map, right? It feels like they'll win 10 in a row, then they'll go 3-7 over their next 10. I think we just don't really know what to expect from the Cavs. But in terms of talent, that's the most talented team of those three. Nobody else has a player like Donovan Mitchell on its roster. Orlando, obviously, almost no playoff experience on that team. So I think if you're the Knicks, you'd ideally like to stay at the three and hope that perhaps Indiana overtakes the Magic and you get that in the first round. But I think they're fine facing off against Indiana. In terms of who's the biggest threat to Boston in the East, there's a reason the Celtics are minus 170 right now, guys, to win the Eastern Conference. I do think it still has to be Milwaukee for me. And, I do wonder, it's like, is now the buying opportunity on the Bucks? They're down to like 10-1 to win the title in light of this Giannis news. I know Chris Haynes yesterday reported that the Bucks are optimistic that Giannis will be ready for round one. But unfortunately for the Bucks, you look at who they might play in round one. Could be the Sixers, could be the Heat, could even be the Pacers, who's given them a lot of trouble. Like, this is not the Eastern Conference of 10 years ago where you just have a cakewalk series in round one if you're the one seed or the two seed. So I do think a healthy Bucks team is still the team I would take to threaten Boston. Philly 10-1, Miami 13-1 to win the East. I think those are the other two you have to look at. And for me, between those two guys, it has to be Miami. We've seen them do this before. Philly, I think you're asking a lot of Joel Embiid, who, by the way, has never really played all that well in the playoffs, to basically ramp up for a week and a half and then go in as of right now and have to play a team like Boston or Milwaukee in round one just to get out of that first round. So I think the path for Philly sets up really difficultly. So if you're looking other than Boston, Milwaukee, I'd say Miami.
Yeah, you've got two of the stars and the teams trying to contend in the East against Boston in Joel Embiid and Giannis Antetokounmpo coming off injuries. Not the most ideal timing for Giannis to have a calf. But again, as you said, Boston minus 170 right now to win the Eastern Conference. Are they on a collision course with the Nuggets in the West in the finals? Or who do you see coming out of that side?
It really feels that way, guys. It really does. I mean, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that it would be an abject disaster for the Celtics to not at least make the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think Celtics fans would be the first to tell you that it's a disaster if they don't make the NBA Finals this year. I mean, there's a 15-game gap between the Celtics and the next best team in the East. Denver, to me, is still the kingpin out West, guys. When they're healthy, I don't think they've been pushing as hard this regular season as they have in the past, and they're still probably going to finish as the one seed. I think that's a really scary thought if you're another team out West. We got to take the Thunder seriously. We got to take the Timberwolves seriously. I'm not really interested in the Clippers at plus 425 to win the West. I'm not interested in the Suns at 9-1. I think those teams have too many question marks. If you're looking for value, guys, the Dallas Mavericks, winners of 16 of their last 18. That's really the only other team I would look at right now outside of Denver.
11-1 in the Western Conference. Nick, you are great. Thank you so much for the time today, and good luck getting into that 15-game slate today.
Hey, looking forward to it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Nick Whalen, always appreciate his time. The Nuggets, at least a plus money number right now in the Western Conference, plus 140. OKC, who he also mentioned, 7-1, and the Timberwolves, 9-1. We're going to hit the break. Back to some NFL talk when we return on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
An action-packed fight card has taken over Las Vegas for UFC 300, and DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC, has given new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any UFC 300 bet. Download the app and use the promo code VSIN when you sign up. That's V-S-I-N. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. And in addition to all the great stuff that you have going on this weekend around the Masters, you guys got a UFC watch party situation that's going to be happening this week as well.
Yeah, stadium swim, and then for our invited guests, the higher rollers, as we say, we have a spot on what's called the 15th floor. So that's a nice setup for them, and we bring some of the pool furniture up, put it up there, and they can watch directly on the screen. And then we pipe the sound in so that they can hear it as well.
What is the biggest event for you guys every year? Is it the March Madness weekend?
The opening weekend of March Madness is number one. Super Bowl's number two. Opening week NFL is sort of surpassing wild card for third. But the 2, 3, and 4 are all NFL related.
When I was down here for that first weekend of March Madness, I knew it was going to be busy. I didn't realize how busy, though.
Oh, yeah.
And it was everywhere, too. Obviously, here more than anywhere else because you've got the world's greatest and largest sports book. Yeah. But all throughout Fremont was
the party
hectic.
Was full. Our party was full, too, on the free viewing party on the third floor in the Galaxy Ballroom. You know, they had over 500 people, so it was jammed. We probably had about 400 over at the D in the 12th floor.
I know it's not quite the same, but you guys will get a draw for the NFL draft, which is upon us in just a couple of weeks as well.
It's
not the same, but
no, it's not the same.
But you guys are going to put up some draft props, you said yesterday.
40 to 50, I heard out of the meeting that we had yesterday. So somewhere between 40 and 50, which is much different than the 5 to 10 we normally have.
Absolutely.
Right?
So obviously, it's no secret at this point. The draft is really going to start at 2. The way that the odds have blown up on Caleb Williams, he's going to be the number one overall pick to the Bears, barring something catastrophic. The Commanders, according to Bleacher Report's Jordan Schultz, reported that they are scheduled to meet with Drake May, Jaden Daniels, and J.J. McCarthy in the coming week. Based on everything that you have heard and thought and seen, do you think that it's Jaden Daniels at 2, or who do you think they go with?
Well, what I think is it's not J.J. McCarthy. I mean, I find this ludicrous. I actually find him at 2, 3, or 4 ludicrous. I don't know what I'm missing here. I mean, but what about him other than he made a few throws on third down. He didn't make mistakes, right? And a team that was a very good rushing team and played defense and, you know, won a national title. But I don't know that necessarily translates. I think it's more about arm talent and your ability to read the field that converts into the NFL. So I still think it's Jaden Daniels. I know there's in the last 2 weeks, the talk has kind of leaned towards May, although the market really hasn't moved off that 160 number much. That flipped after Brian Kelly said he'll be great for Washington.
I'm with you on all of the J.J. McCarthy side of it. The thing that I keep on trying to wrap my head around a little bit is like, I watched a lot of Michigan football over the last couple years, and I don't recall more than maybe once walking away from a game and saying, wow, J.J. McCarthy.
I always say wow on both sides of their lines.
Yes.
That's what I walk away talking about. And Corum. And Corum for a small back was a very powerful runner, right? But, I mean, he could not move the ball against Iowa. Let's be honest. In that Big Ten championship game, Iowa shut them down. If Iowa doesn't turn the ball over and they don't have that punt return, that's a one-score game against a team in Iowa that can't put any points on the board. When they didn't have separation for their receivers, he wasn't moving the ball down the field.
He's a winner. He's a competitor. Yeah. He's really good on third down. But, like, largely as far as arm talent, good, not great, accuracy, good, not special. Like, I'll go back to a lot of these different things. Plus, the sample size was so small in terms of him actually having to do things with the ball in his hands. It'll be interesting to see how this shakes out. Just about everyone and their mother that I see as these mock drafts go through have the Vikings trading up to get him, whether that be with the Arizona Cardinals or whether that be the Los Angeles Chargers, who is obviously J.J. McCarthy's former head coach, Jim Harbaugh, who's been hyping him up to no end. And what a dream situation that would be, that he gets to trade out of a spot, go get his offensive lineman somewhere else, get a few more picks in the draft, and know that his quarterback is going somewhere good in the Minnesota Vikings.
Do you think New England is live to trade out of 3?
I would find it hard to believe.
Yeah. You're with Michael on that.
I am. I know that there have been some reports that Elliott Wolf would like to stockpile picks, and they do have a lot more needs than just the quarterback position, but the quarterback position is certainly the most pressing in my brain. You have somebody in Jacoby Brissett that you brought in to make it where maybe you don't have to start your quarterback right away, which Gerard Mayo has said. Maybe they do get a rookie quarterback and they sit him for a little while, give him that opportunity. But the class that's supposed to be coming out next year is not supposed to be anywhere near what is projected with this group. So I feel like if you're going to get a quarterback that's young, yep, this is the time to do it.
Okay. I just think they're so far away. Like the Cowboys, when they drafted Aikman, were 1-15, right? But he came with a wave of people and all those draft picks that they stockpiled from Minnesota in the Herschel. So they got better quick. Like, do you see New England winning the East in 2 years? I mean, I know Michael says the defense was tremendous and the quarterbacks turned the ball over and all that. But like, to me, watching them, like there was that stretch where they were like outscored 105-10 or whatever in 3 games. I mean, they were competitive.
But there was also how many games where they only allowed 10 points and couldn't win.
Yeah.
Right. So like it could, there, a lot of those games could have gone either way late if they had some form of moving the football, and obviously the quarterback being central to that. With JJ McCarthy specifically, Vikings +125. Like, that's the bet I would make if I was doing anything with JJ McCarthy. Where do you sit on the position total at 4.5? It's 4.5 over -200, under +160, which has come down from the +180 following Mel Kiper's latest mock draft, where he only had 4 quarterbacks go. He had it 1, 2, 3, and then JJ to the Vikings at 5 in the Chargers spot, and that was all.
So you're going to lay $2 either way if you think he's going at 5, right? If you want to go under 5.5, it's going to be $2, or over 4.5. It's between $2 and $2.20. I personally, as a philosophy, don't want to lay prices in the draft. I would much rather try to find all plus. I just, to me, the amount of uncertainty in the draft, I'd rather have more certainty watching a game play out and making a bet on what I'm seeing than on what other people's opinions are and somebody's making a decision for an organization. So, I mean, if anything, I would take a shot over 5.5 that the Chargers don't trade out and he doesn't get drafted at 5, right? That would be the only shot I'd be willing to take there.
In this same realm of conversation, who do you think is more likely if there are 5 quarterbacks to go, Bo Nix or Michael Penix?
Oh, I think Michael Penix for sure. Because the ceiling is much higher. I know Michael and is right in saying we don't know what the doctors are saying, but I bet the doctors are saying different things for each team.
Every team has a different medical personnel.
Personally, if I had one of these picks, you know, and I will say this too, because I'm not a May person, after Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, I don't know if I don't think Penix is the next best quarterback available.
But when you have all those injuries, granted,
well, you're taking a chance.
Yeah, it's a big question. A 2 shoulder injuries, 2 serious knee injuries.
So either you're in on him high, or it's going to be way later.
So then what do you make of the talk of Bo Nix and the Broncos? Because Sean Payton hasn't had the opportunity to have his guy, right?
He wants a short quarterback that has a controlled passing game like Breeze. I mean, I don't know.
To that point,
can you win in the NFL when you don't stretch the field at all? When all your passes are near the line of scrimmage? I guess that's kind of a Tua question, although they changed that when they got the speed at wide receiver to throw down the field. I just don't know that you can do that. Because if you have to take 14 yards to go down the field, you're not going to break tackles like you do in college, where Oregon could hit big plays. That doesn't happen in the NFL. And when you have to go 14 plays, it's tough not to have a holding penalty, a drop pass, and you end up punting because of that. That's the whole goal of the NFL. Every defense, right, is to bend and not break, and the offense makes a mistake somewhere along the way and turns the ball over, has to punt. Or field goals, which are like wins for the defense.
Yeah, he played a really long time in college too. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he had a lot of time to work out the kinks and find the fit in that offense in that spot. Going to the NFL, it's a very different thing. And not that you're going to make a lot of money tailing Mel Kiper in his mock drafts, but in his write-up, he did say, because he had Bo Nix at 12 going to the Broncos in his previous iteration, he said, "I thought hard about giving the Broncos Bo Nix, but I talked myself out of it. I just don't think Nix is a first-round signal caller. I have a round 2 grade on him based on everything I've seen on tape." But we just see teams reach for quarterbacks in these drafts. And so I feel like you can't count it out, but I don't believe that Bo Nix is a first round pick. As much as I love him as a person, he is a great human being, great family, great story. Love the way that he overcame from the way that things went at Auburn to Oregon. He's not a first round pick in my brain.
I'm going to give him my vote for Heisman, but I can't give him my vote for the first round. A different thing. It's a different game. What he did at college was great.
Yeah, I mean, ended up being NCAA all-time leading passer by the time that he graduated and move on. We're going to hit the break. Coming back, resetting for hour two here on the Lombardi Line. Stay with us. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.